Welcome in. Wrong side of the pond. He is DJ Schweitzer. I'm Jeremy Lance. Hey, bud.
We're clearly having a beer tonight.
It's been a day.
I was going to say, you seem like you needed one.
I need multiple.
Yeah? Well,
it's been a real fun weekend.
Last I checked, this is our multiple for this evening.
Yeah.
We went through the first one before we even started recording. That's just to give you an idea of what kind of night it's going to be for us.
Yeah, I've had a fun weekend. Children swallowing batteries.
Always good, I think.
Day-long company meetings.
Also good.
Worked some TV back in the TV booth this earlier today.
Seems like a good thing.
Feels like it was long ago. Mm-hmm. I guess it was also today.
How about that?
Did that. Ran all my other leagues that I run on Sundays.
Busy man.
And now I'm here, just hanging out on your couch.
Well, that's fine. At least there's beer at this one, right?
Yeah. I think that's the plan from now on, is just to have beer at all of them.
Yeah. I don't know that we've ever had one where we've not had beer. Save for maybe some of the first shows early on when we were still at the radio station. Yeah.
Until we just decided, screw this. Let's start drinking at this radio station.
Yeah, that's a valid point. And then, obviously, we've been doing this in my living room ever since, and
no rules.
No, there are no rules here.
Right.
Cocaine and hookers, pretty much.
Yeah.
Are fine as long as my wife's already in bed.
I mean, there's that one time I wore your pants.
I forgot all about that. That was, the title of that show, I think, was Jeremy Wears My Pants, or Jeremy's In My Pants, or something to that.
I was in them.
Luckily, you are in your own pants this evening. I am also in my own pants. Lots to talk about this week, of course. Lots of football, domestically, internationally, that we'll be getting into. But also, the transfer window is coming to a close.
Thursday, right?
Thursday.
Shots on Thursday?
That's right. In most of Europe, I believe. There are a couple other, little stagnant locations that kind of extend into different time periods. But we're drinking a very apt beer tonight. Drinking Rheingeist's Striker, something that a lot of people will be looking for here in the close of the transfer window.
Yeah.
A lot of teams probably won't come up with those.
No, I'm going to say no Striker will be attained that will make really any difference.
Well, we can get into that a little bit later on.
Or if you're Arsenal, you get a striker that will make a difference, and then you don't play him.
That makes total sense.
Pretty great.
It's about the Arsenal thing to do at this point. In fact, this is pretty much par for the course with them. But lots, of course, to talk about. Before we get into any of that, let's do what we normally do and do our fantasy update.
Talk about how awesome we are in fantasy?
Yeah, let's hit MLS first because we continue to be pretty much dreadful in that league. Neither one of us moved places. I stayed in 50th, you stayed in 57th. Of 57.
You got to put that out there.
Huh? I can't not leave it out. It's what I have to do.
People could just assume, they probably got 100 people, just like the Premier League one, eh?
No, actually, there's way less. And I will continue to remind everyone of your slightly worseness in that league, as opposed to myself. Over in the Premier League, we're both slightly marginally better. There are slightly more than 57 people in that league. There are 141. I improved 7 places to 120th, so I'm not really far off from where you are in the MLS one.
Come on, Dan.
You fell 18 places to 103rd.
Water's warm.
Yeah, it feels good down there. And then for the second show running, Mad King's Reign by Jackson Fumbro is on top of the pile.
Fumbro.
Yeah, probably butchering his name. Sorry, Jackson, if that is the case. But there's your fantasy update, which of course allows us to get into the weekend action, which is what you guys are all really here to listen to. Should we start off giving praise to a group that we normally receive feedback on that we're a little too harsh on? That beat up on another team that we're also frequently hearing from that we're a little too harsh on them in the Liverpool-Arsenal game?
First of all, to those people that feel that we are harsh on Liverpool, just go away. I'm just so done your act.
Give the old bye, Felicia. Yeah. To the Liverpool fans
who
think we're a little too harsh.
Leave us your honest 5-star review and never listen again.
I think most of them have quit listening, to be perfectly honest.
At this point, they should have.
Yeah.
It's really on them if they're still hanging in there.
To be fair, it's been a while since we've had anyone tell us, hey, you guys are a little too mean to Liverpool.
It was really just one person.
There were a couple, but mostly it was just one.
Just the one chotch.
But should we start there anyway?
I mean, is there anywhere else to start?
No.
I mean...
No, I don't think there is.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Liverpool 4, Arsenal, nothing.
I'm just going to start off here. Liverpool are really fast. Like, their team, on the whole, are like the world's most quick counterattack ever.
Right.
They fly forward as a unit.
Well, I mean, look at the guys they got. I mean, they got Salah, Mane. I mean, these are just... they're smaller guys,
mm-hmm.
so they don't have a whole lot of height and physicality up front.
True.
But they're just going to blow past you.
Yeah, and that they did with Liverpool this weekend. Salah's goal, probably the accentuating point on how fast they actually were. Liverpool's second on the day, kind of picked off a pass a little inside of midfield and then just went off to the races and went 60 yards with it and ultimately finished really coolly. But, I mean, it was a textbook example of the yep. way that this team can counterattack. Really fun to watch.
I mean, they were churning the wheels so well that even Daniel Sturridge scored a goal.
Yeah, I know, right? I was a little shocked. And
didn't get injured in the process.
I was a little shocked that he was, like, actually in the picture. Like, I kind of forgot he was even playing for them, which is insane considering that Coutinho, like, still hasn't seen any action for them this year. And whether or not he ultimately will, we'll probably find out before Thursday. But, it was really surprising to see him tag in that fourth goal. I was like, oh, look at that guy.
Oh, hey, there you are.
You're not crocked anymore. So that was kind of cool to see.
Let's jump back, though. Those lineups come out.
Mm-hmm.
And both sides really had a bit of a woe moment.
Mm-hmm.
So for Liverpool, their big woe was... okay. So Mingele
already dropped.
Already lost the job.
Yeah.
Karius in, Mingele out. I mean, we talked about this in a preview. This was mm-hmm. a battle that we saw that was going to happen and happened last season to an extent until Karius broke his hand or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that pretty much made that decision from that point on.
Yeah. And Mingele back in by default almost. Now, he's been dropped, and we talked about the performance he had last week and how he's kind of at fault for a couple of the goals that went down. He loses that position, but I think there wasn't like an outcry from the Liverpool fans in the way that the Arsenal fans were outcrying at the starting 11 that they saw.
Yeah, let's move to that one.
Mm-hmm.
So, big match at Anfield, a place that Arsenal has struggled mm-hmm. Historically, especially recently. Not a ton of success. So obviously you need a lot of firepower. So mm-hmm. naturally, you know, you spend 60 some odd million on a striker.
Who's had a pretty good start, by the way.
Sure. And much like the amount you spent on him, that's about when you want to put him in the match.
Mm-hmm.
The 63rd minute.
Yeah, that makes sense.
1 minute for every £1 million you spent on him.
Yeah, you have to say this was like a total tactics move by Wenger.
Yeah.
You could see what he was shooting for, kind of.
No, I'm going to need you to... What was he shooting for? You have Lacazette, you have Giroud, and you played Welbeck.
Okay, I'll be honest. I'm not really sure what he was trying to think there. I think what he ultimately was thinking, if you're talking about pace, I don't know Lacazette well enough at this point to be like, oh, he's got enough to run with Liverpool. And I think that was yeah. the mindset he was going for there. And you look at a guy like Welbeck and you go, yeah, he's probably the paciest of their strikers. The problem being is that's at the other end of the pitch from where,
right.
where Liverpool is going to be attacking you. And by the way, you don't have any pace back there either.
Right. And any proof that, Arsene had his idea, this was his game plan, blah, 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 blah. They subbed on the two other strikers at like the same time. They had to move... All the guys that were supposed to play eventually had to be thrown on
mm-hmm.
about an hour into this match.
Yeah.
So then we go to other positions. For some reason, Bellerin uses he's a right-footed player.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally, you'd put him at left wing back.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Which is what they did.
Mm-hmm. Look, I as a wing back in my pomp. I'm left-footed. The idea of playing on the right, while I have done it, is probably a wrong idea.
But so you bring in a guy like Kolasinac, isn't that to solve that issue?
You'd think?
And then you can take Bellerin, put him on the other end, and then you don't have to have Ox trying to go Victor Moses here and learn the wingback position just on the fly.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like, and this is what I think is the real frustration, is you, myself, who has, you know, tactically doesn't get a lot of things, because
mm-hmm.
I didn't play much. Most people saw this lineup and could see all the problems. Why can't Arsene Wenger, why didn't he see these problems? Didn't he see these glaring errors in this lineup?
I think where Arsene's problems are lying, and he has many, but I think what he's stuck doing is it's almost like he's trying to reprove himself. Yeah. And with the Bellerin choice, what I think he was shooting for here, and much like the Welbeck, he was thinking, okay, we're going to try to do what they're going to do. We're going to counterattack them. We're going to bring pace.
And recently he's had a touch of success with that. He reproved himself at the end of last year by moving to that three-man back line, and they looked amazing.
They looked much better, yeah. But by the way, of course, that was too late, as he always tends to make his adjustments. But with the Bellerin decision, you could see a little bit what he was shooting for there as well. He's kind of like, hey, we've had a lot of success. There's this whole idea of having inverted wingers who are going to cut in and are going to be able to use their dominant foot once they cut inside. The problem being is that you do that with wingers, not wing backs. Like, that's where the issue, I think, starts with. Like, when you're playing wing backs, you need guys who can bomb the wing and serve. Not bomb the wing, cut inside, and shoot. That's not what right. wing backs do. They're there for service, not for cutting inside and creating.
Right.
So I think what Wenger is doing is he's overthinking everything instead of playing to his team's strengths. I'm still a little fuzzy on what their strengths are based on the team he's constructed, but running and gunning against a team that's literally built to run and gun seems like a really bad idea. And oh, by the way, that's exactly how it panned out today.
I mean, it's frustrating because you look at, I mean, not frustrating for me. I find it hilarious. It's frustrating for Arsenal fans because they look at this lineup. I mean, you look at this squad. Petrček, okay, one of the greatest keepers in the Premier League era.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then you look at that back line. When you put guys in the right position, they actually can put out a pretty formidable back line.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a three with the wingbacks or if they just go with a straight four. They have the guys there to put out a really strong back line. Midfield, I think, is kind of where things get a little murky.
Mm-hmm.
And then we thought they had solved things up top. And especially now that Alexis is back in. That was the one bright spot, is he was back in the fold.
For now. Of course,
it would have been nice with him being back up top with the new striker signing that you made.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, if I were Arsene Wenger and I were trying to counterattack, I would have still left Lacazette in there.
Uh-huh.
I would probably play Welbeck in one of the wide positions, potentially. Not as a wing back, but maybe as like an attacking three.
Like on the opposite of Alexis.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Welbeck, you know, would have been that other foil. And you would have used that as your pace and let Alexis and the three of them run at them. And
right.
to me, it was just kind of like, I saw that 11 and went, what?
Right.
Like, what? He's trying to counter here. I know that's what he's trying to do, but why is he doing it this way? I don't know. It's kind of further evidence of what's going on there. Defensively, that the everything went wrong for them in this sense. Like, everyone kind of looked, I don't know if uninterested is the right way of explaining it, but they just didn't look up for it. And
well, luckily for them, there was a team that was more uninterested that played on Sunday. We'll get to them in a moment.
Sure, sure.
They were even outperformed in that category.
Okay, well, at least they got it in that respect. Only chance really that came for Arsenal early on did come through Welbeck. By the way, early on in the running, a nice counter kind of sprung by Sanchez, found him over the top, and Welbeck had a decent look but didn't really do anything with it. You mentioned Cech, who is one of the strengths of the side. Still, despite his age, I think he kept this from getting like super ugly. I think we could have been in a position where like five or six or seven goals could have gone in had it not been for Cech having a fairly decent game. Not to say that he was perfect by any stretch, but Liverpool had everything working for them. I thought Salah was really good in this game. Firmino, this is probably one of his best games in a Liverpool shirt.
Right.
A guy
he didn't hit one of his own players trying to make a pass. So yeah. That was positive.
Yeah, it's always good. But for a team that's missing arguably their talisman in Coutinho, Firmino's really stepped up. And I think that's kind of been the sign of all this is like maybe they would be okay to let him go potentially. But, you know, whether or not that would actually happen is another story altogether. But, yeah, I mean, full credit to Liverpool. I think Klopp got the tactics entirely correct in this one, and Wenger really struck out on that particular front.
I mean, what are we looking at here with Wenger, though? Like, I mean, the we talk about Wenger blowing it with the tactics, Wenger blowing it with the lineup. The front office, though, blew it because they're kind of stuck with him right now. You can't make a change right now. You had the summer. If you wanted to do that, that was the time, right? To be able to make that change and then get in somebody of enough quality, that was the time to do it. Now you're a couple matches into the season, and you're looking at the same problems, the same frustrations that dogged you last season and has dogged you in the past. I mean, I don't even know what they do at this point. They're stuck. They're stuck with this guy.
Yeah, I mean, giving him a new contract at the tail end of last season literally was one of the most incomprehensible moves I've seen a big team make in recent memory. And the writing's been on the wall about how bad a position this club is in and how Wenger has just lost the ability to manage at this top level anymore. I'm sorry if you're an Arsenal fan and you're listening to this and you're not, you know, not nodding your head at this. I think you're all kind of delusional at this point. I have a lot of respect for what Wenger's done. He's a great manager. There's really no doubt in the fact that he changed the way a lot of managerial decisions are made and the way that people approach the game. But they've kind of gone past it at this point. And much like you said, they've made their bet already. Like, they're stuck with him through a good chunk of the season.
Like, who are you going to... If you pulled the trigger
that's
today...
The there's... Who?
Tuchel? Is like literally the only name I can think of that's out there. And I don't even know if that's good enough
for him. That might be it. And I know...
Klinsmann.
Yeah, well...
did Allardyce land anywhere yet?
Well, no. He hadn't, to my knowledge, no. I think Pardew's still looking for work
yeah?
as well.
So, okay, there you go.
There aren't a whole lot of good options left. And I, you know, we've talked about Tuchel before and whether or not I think he got a raw deal at Dortmund. I think he's open for debate. But they've put themselves in a really bad position. And the thing is look, a lot of us see the writing on the wall. Like, it needs to happen. I'm not convinced that they think it needs to happen.
Well, they clearly don't think it needs to happen. They literally just months ago handed him a 2-year contract.
I'm just saying it's mind-boggling. So Arsenal have some sort of work to get themselves out of, and I'm afraid, like, Alexis Sanchez, I don't know that it's going to happen, but there's been a lot of talk of it. He could be gone by Thursday.
Right.
Like, that's one of their best players. Like,
well, I mean, let's say he's not gone. He's a guy that clearly wants to be gone, so what kind of effort are you going to get from him the rest of the way if he does stay around?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Or is he just going to ride this out till January say, hey, you got to move me now?
Well, much like Ozil, like, I think his contract's up at the end of the season as
right.
well. So
move now or get nothing.
Like, they have to move him in January. Otherwise, he's free to leave at the end, and they're not going to get anything in exchange for him. And you know, I don't know that either one of them will for sure go, or I could totally see both of them potentially signing new contracts if a new manager were to come in. But they're in such a precarious situation with some of their best players, and with Wenger kind of being the lead, like the domino that needs to fall first for things to actually move the way they need them to. So
I literally just figured something out.
What's that?
I figured out why there's so many Arsenal supporters here in Cincinnati.
Why is that?
Because I feel like what you just described has been the past, like, 8 years for the Bengals. Marvin Lewis has done just enough to not get fired for, like, the past decade.
Hmm.
one of the more tenured guys. Yeah. Actually, I think outside of Belichick, the most tenured head coach in the NFL. Arsene Wenger, pretty much the dean at the moment in the Premier League.
I get that logic. The only difference being, I often think about this myself, like why are there a lot of Arsenal fans? For people that are my age, when the Premier League first started coming onto the television regularly and accessibly, they played some of the most attractive soccer out there. They have an ethos, clearly. Whether that ethos is correct or not broken at this point is a whole other discussion. But I understand why people kind of flock to them. Like, it's a club that they don't flaunt the, like, more than a club kind of concept the way that Barcelona does, but that's kind of the way that Arsenal hold themselves.
Sure.
And
I would say their opponent today also feels the same way.
Sure. and how accurate that is also another discussion that could be open for debate, but I understand that. But the difference between Marvin Lewis and Arsene Wenger is Arsene Wenger has actually won things. Like, he does have trophies in his cabinet.
Yeah, okay. As the head man.
Yeah,
and Marvin Lewis won, was a defense coordinator, won the Super Bowl with the Ravens.
Sure, so sure.
He has seen the promised land.
Right, but none under his own guidance, right?
Absolutely, no.
So, but I hear that point, and I do think there is some truth in that statement, like, just holding on. But I think if you took a straw poll of Arsenal fans here in Cincinnati and how many of them would balk at the idea of Wenger going, I think you'd find a similar number that would think that, hey, Marvin probably needs to see out the way as well.
I think they're almost identical in the fact that they are guys that every year you go, well, surely this is the year they get rid of him.
Hmm.
And then they do just enough to not get the axe. And yet then next season starts and immediately going, this has got to be the last year again, right?
Can we get Arsenal Fan TV to Cincinnati this weekend? Is that something that we can do?
I think we're on. I think we have $1 million idea over here.
All right, let's see what we
can
do.
Get the camera. Yeah. We'll head down to the stadium.
All right, I've got a nice new gimbal. We'll use that thing.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the really awesome Sunday you guys had.
Ah, damn it. Tottenham 1, Burnley 1. Spurs 2 minutes from finally shaking their Wembley boogeyman, and the boogeyman was like, yeah, no.
Just kidding.
I'm still here. Burnley pulling one back through debutant Wood.
What minute was that?
I'm pretty sure it was the 91st minute.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it wasn't Sterling territory in the 97th.
Nah. Kieran Trippier falling asleep on the back post, letting a nice through ball slip through, and Woods pulls that back. Right at the death. Spurs issues at Wembley. I last week tried to say, like, these aren't that big of a deal. It's not that big of a deal. I'm a little bit worrying that it's still that big of a deal. I'm not panicking yet, but it is something that's, like, concerning. Spurs have looked very disjuncted. They've not been moving the ball as smoothly as they were the tail end of last year, or throughout most of last year, for that matter. Burnley, troublesome. Throughout, like, they didn't ever really go away, even though Spurs statistically dominated things. I'm wondering, like, is just like Spurs are just waiting for the shoe to drop, but I just
what is that shoe?
I don't know. It's Harry Kane not being able to score in August. I think it's a part of it. Spurs also have, like,
good news. Your next match is in September.
Well, thank God. By the way, I don't know if you noticed, and this isn't a topic that we're going to delve into on this particular show, but did you notice what the Champions League draw was for Tottenham? Crap. Real Madrid and Dortmund.
Nah, those guys aren't good.
Nah, neither one of them have, like, been to a bunch of semifinals and finals or winning the thing in multiple years in the past.
Right.
5 years or anything,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah,
so
the defending champion there. Chelsea also got a crap draw. So
yeah, I was looking over the draw though. I'm not trying to get away from the Spurs.
No, that's fine.
Maybe I am.
You know, we didn't budget it in there, but we probably should have. So
yeah,
let's go ahead and do it.
We'll do this here. Looking through the draw, outside of United, who I think are always handed a really amazing draw in this competition, and I'm not, like, conspiracy theorying this, but let's conspiracy theory it for a second. The groups were all actually pretty damn tough. Like, looking through it top to bottom, there weren't a whole lot of groups that I was like, oh man, these guys got an easy draw. Liverpool's was so-so.
United's is,
I think Liverpool got Sevilla and CSKA Moscow, but like United did have a fairly easy one to go with. But, you know, with Spurs and the issues they've had at Wembley, and last year obviously was the focus in that, given that the Champions League run went really poorly last year. And now we get this draw. I'm actually a little nervous about like where things stand and us playing at Wembley. And you shouldn't really think of that with this type of squad. But why this is so worrying to me was something I mentioned on the preview show. And it's, if we don't win something this year, I'm worried about exodus. Like that's legitimately where my head is. And we're three games into the season and we're 1-1-1. And I shouldn't be worried about this type of stuff at this point, but it is something that makes me nervous and that I'm thinking about more than I probably should at this stage in the campaign.
If Gareth Bale scores against you, does he celebrate?
I'm going to weep. There's no way he celebrates if he scores against Spurs. Okay, I think that's impossible.
He's classy.
He is too classy of a guy to pull that type of stuff off. If you don't know this, if you're a rather new listener, Spurs obviously are my team. And Gareth Bale, and Gareth Bale legitimately is my all-time favorite player. He has surpassed Roberto Carlos, a Madrid player, by the way.
I don't think I actually knew this, that Bale was top billing
for him. Yeah, he's scooted into the top spot. Probably if for no other reason than like how much I've gotten to watch him versus how much I got to watch Roberto Carlos back in the day. But both are the type of player I fancied myself, growing up. So,
still waiting for someone to trump Drogba and Lampard as 1A and 1B.
I'm just going to say you're probably going to have to wait a while.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, is this concern here? Wembley continues to be a struggle.
Yeah, it is totally a concern. I need a good result and like a full 90 minutes for it to pan out correctly. For me to feel like that boogeyman's not a real thing.
You mentioned Champions League group stage. That's the last time you guys won at Wembley was Champions League group stage.
Yeah, it was just one out of
three matches that were played.
So we lost the other game we played in Wembley last year too. So against your boys.
Who?
Yeah.
Speaking of my boys, let's move on. Two teams that were just rolling on the weekend. Manchester United. That made sense. We see them as a team that's going to be doing this a lot this year. They get past Leicester City 2-0. Could have been a lot more. There was a missed penalty by Lukaku.
Mm-hmm.
Good
save by Schmeichel, by the way,
yeah.
Who then proceeded to go on and bunk up a save.
Well, there was that.
Who was that had that particular goal? Rashford.
Yeah, it was Rashford and Fellaini were the two goal scorers in this one, which is kind of odd, seeing the firepower that they've had in the first two matches coming from where you would expect, the Lukaku, the Pogba.
Yeah, go figure. I picked up Lukaku before this week in fantasy, and then he goes and misses a penalty and neglects to score.
Said I'm done.
Yeah, that's how it goes. Juan Mata, a former Chelsea man who I know you were a big fan of.
If he's still wearing blue, you know, maybe Lampard has a... has
a little bit of something there. Mata was a magician in the first half. The one touch bring down that he had where he megged the defender, I can't remember who he was going at that particular spot, was literally one of the most phenomenal bits of skill I've seen so far this season. Just really, really good. Fellaini, of course, you mentioned getting that insurance goal. Here's the stat from this particular game, and it's actually more looking at their campaign thus far. 10 goals for... zero allowed for United in the Premier League so far.
In three matches.
Damn. Like, that's a pretty decent start. We've talked a little bit about how it's been a fairly easy start for them. That was the first one where we really kind of saw them go up against a team that has a little bit of strength themselves. United peppered that goal. Like, the whole first half was like a shooting range. Lukaku had a couple that were real close. Pogba had one that were really, really close. It was a team that looked like it was going to just run over the opposition again. And while they didn't put four in for a change this weekend, two was certainly something that was pretty good.
All right, let's move on. Chelsea, they get the 2-0 victory over Everton today. Here's Sunday as we record. I feel good, obviously. Yeah. A win against an opponent that I thought was going to be a formidable opponent. But they played Monday against City.
Mm-hmm.
They played in the midweek against somebody in Europa funness. Sigurdsson had an insane goal.
Oh, God, yeah. Way to open your account, right?
Slipping and hitting a 40-yarder that catches the keeper out.
It made every Everton fan go, okay, yeah, he's worth 50. That's fine. I'm okay with that.
Did you say 50? Yeah,
that's good. Okay, well, that's we're good.
That's a good amount.
Fabregas, back from suspension.
Hi, everybody.
Goal and an assist.
Goal and an assist. It was funny. He scores like 2 minutes after he orchestrated possibly the worst corner kick in the history of the Premier League. Like, it was just atrocious beyond belief. And then eventually, you know, they get back possession and a little nice give and go there. Morata on the assist, little heading it down. And it just really good heads up play and just great awareness. And movement by Morata to create that assist, putting the ball back into the path of Fabregas, who puts it in. Chelsea will go up 2-0 then when Morata gets on the end of a cross into the box.
Yeah.
Basically the ball that he was supposed to put in against Tottenham, right?
The line, the movie is evading me, where he's like, and you totally redeemed yourself.
Oh, it's Dumb and Dumber, yeah.
But
Fabregas did that, and then Morata did that.
Yeah, both those guys themselves. Righting wrongs in one foul swoop. It was literally almost the exact same setup scenario, although I think the one against Spurs was even wider open than it was in this particular game, but a really well-taken goal. I thought Chelsea, the build-up play from them in this particular game was just fantastic. The ball mm-hmm. was moving around all over the place. Great interchange, lots of movement off the ball. This is the question that it kind of prompted for me when I was looking through this match. First week was a disaster for Chelsea.
To say the least.
Last week, you kind of looked at it like it was papering over cracks.
Right. We gutted out a performance.
How are you feeling after this one?
I put up a gif of Kramer in a pimp suit walking down the street and said, Chelsea.
Yeah.
Back in business.
Back in business.
We are playing in a way, and I said this last week, we talk about the let-off that Chelsea has shown after winning the title. And why I don't feel now that that's going to happen is there is a spirit about this team. There is a will to fight and get the job done that didn't exist 2 years ago when they finished 10th.
Mm-hmm.
Still trying to figure out where they sit as far as being a contender, but I'm really excited about the fact that this team is starting to come together. And, mm-hmm. and obviously here we're just a couple weeks away from, you know, Bakayoko is now healthy where he's making his appearances. Hazard is probably a few more weeks away from getting back into the fold. And obviously that's going to be crucial to get him in.
Sure.
And we'll get to it later in our transfer talk, what the next couple days have in store for Chelsea will be quite interesting mm-hmm. as they seem to be the one big team in the Premier League looking to make not just one, but upwards of three moves as far as inbound players. Yeah, I'm feeling good, but, you know, we'll see. Listen, this was an Everton side that looked half awake. They looked about as bland and as drab as their awful away kit that they were wearing that today
mm-hmm.
that was the color of like gas station napkins. And I thought this was gonna be a good match.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was gonna be like a real tough fight, but I mean they really weren't troubled this entire match.
No,
Rooney had like one half decent chance.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Ashley Williams had that bicycle kick that was like a little over the bar. I hesitate to even call it bicycle.
It was funny. I think at one point the commentators on the broadcast even said, like, you know, the Monday papers always like to put out player ratings. I don't even think Courtois can get one because he hasn't even had to do anything.
Yeah. I do think that Everton really didn't really trouble you too much, although I think towards the end of the match they looked a little bit stronger.
Or we just stopped giving a crap.
Well, that could be it as well.
We were on cruise control at that point.
I do want to point out, you know, while Rooney wasn't fantastic in this match, I don't think he was poor. I think we need to point out the fact that he retired from international football effective immediately this past week.
Mm-hmm. It was like there was odd timing with it where, like, I forget who it was in the Everton squad that was quoted as saying that he needed to be brought back in. Mm-hmm. And then, like, 10 hours later, I'm out.
Yeah, and basically he used Everton as a reason for why he didn't want to do it anymore. He wants to be fully focused on helping the team be as best as they can this year. And
you know, hey, guys, we got this Thursday-Sunday schedule. It's going to be a real burden.
Yeah, and I think, too, he even said, you know, the one regret that he has in his career is not achieving much with England to this point. But I do think it's worth noting, like, there were so many people that came out of the woodwork that mentioned, you know, like, oh, he's kind of past it. And, you know, he didn't really have that great of a career because he didn't achieve that much with England. Guys, he is literally one of the best players of his generation. Like, if you think that Wayne Rooney was an overrated player, much like we were saying, hey, Liverpool fans that think that we're a little too harsh on your club, just stop listening. Like, seriously. Wayne Rooney is one of the preeminent best players of that generation that's come through, and it's starting to fade off now. You think about the dominant Barcelona team that's now starting to fade off a little bit. Like, that generation of players, that Spain team, the dominant Real Madrid side that's starting to see a little bit of turnover in its ranks even, Wayne Rooney is near the peak of that pack of people.
Right.
Yeah, he didn't achieve a lot, and yeah, he had kind of some disappointing moments with the national team. But a lot of people have had those moments, too.
And well, I mean, he's really one of the last few guys from that, you know, the legendary Sir Alex era that's still being able to put in a shift anywhere.
Yeah, and do so fairly well, for that matter. So, please don't slate Wayne Rooney. I'm by no means a United fan.
Right, we're two guys that have probably rooted against him his whole career, but we understand, like,
he is a very good player, and respect him for what he's done to this point, even if it hasn't been as good as we all would have potentially hoped it would be.
Hair system thing, I kind of do have a problem with.
You're a bald man. You're allowed to judge him on
that. I mean, if I had that sponsorship deal, you know, like him and Clattenburg.
Yeah, you might have some hair on top of your head right now. Let's move on into some of the other Premier League action on the weekend. Let's start with the first league match that did unfold. Bournemouth 1, City 2. This was actually a fairly entertaining match.
Bournemouth getting on the board first, right?
Yeah, and the strike from, was it Daniels.
The country singer.
Yeah.
Charlie Daniels.
Same guy.
Charlie Davies does not play in Europe.
Yeah, that Charlie Davies that played in the USL for Bethlehem.
Yeah.
Like, and scored a goal. Yes, it was Charlie Daniels who had what may end up being the strike of the season for Bournemouth. No angle.
Is that the devil went down to Georgia guy?
Maybe. Yeah, I think so. One and the same. But yeah, hell of a hit. Opened it up, 13th minute strike for him there. Gabriel Jesus tying things up a little bit later on in the first half for them. The kind of talking point in this match was Aguero starting on the bench and looking really unhappy about it at Bournemouth. But I think Gabriel Jesus has justified it. Not only did he get the goal, but he had the brilliant play that led up to that, taking the free kick and then moving off the ball so well. He was pressuring in a way that Aguero doesn't normally pressure. I am really, really high on this kid. I think he is a fantastic talent. And he's really picked things back up after having a long injury layoff last season. He's kind of right back where he was at the start of the season before.
Sterling scoring in the 97th minute. Mm-hmm. 97th minute was allowed to play. Actually, I think like 100 minutes ended up being played in this one.
I love it when it breaks triple digits. I don't know what it is about that. But then picking up a second yellow in the aftermath of that goal celebration because, and this is the rumor, is that because he went into the crowd, and I think he did kind of like go over to the City fans that had traveled and was getting hugged, and I don't know if he went over the sponsor boards or whatever.
Well, there was a lot that went on there at the end. I mean, there was reports that Aguero assaulted a steward at the end of this match.
Insanity.
Bedlam.
Yeah, it was really, really nuts at the end. The whole build-up to this goal was also pretty nuts as well. But, yeah, overall, an enjoyable match and a good way to get the weekend kicked off.
The weekend did kick off with that, and then we had a slew of kind of not really important matches.
Mm-hmm.
Crystal Palace falling yet again to Swansea. Tammy Abrams, that was kind of my one of the, like, hey, watch out for this guy. Chelsea Loney, I think he's going to have a good year for them. Mm-hmm. He finally gets on the score sheet, so he gets his first goal in the Premier League. Hopefully more from him. Crystal Palace is terrible.
Yeah, they're really not doing well at the start of the season. We kind of talked about, hey, it looks like they might get their things together this year. No.
Nope.
No, that's definitely not happening.
That's a total lie.
Yeah.
Huddersfield stays unbeaten as they get the 0-0 draw with Southampton. Both teams with opportunities to get the 3 points in this one. And then Newcastle.
Finding their way back in.
Oh, that's how you score goals.
Yeah.
So they get the 3-0 victory. West Ham, there is a problem.
Yeah, things are not going well in that portion of London at the moment. Real quickly,
Slaven Bilic's job is apparently under review.
It's been under review for like the last 6 months. Right. I don't know what's going on any different there. Here's a really frustrating part about this Newcastle win, right? Mitrovic hadn't played a minute prior to this point in the season. He was one of the strikers I had on my fantasy team. I dumped it, picking up Lukaku. Thought it was a great idea, right? Mm. Picked up Lukaku. Mitrovic comes in the 72nd minute as a substitute. Scores.
Scores in the 86.
This is literally why I suck at fantasy. Like, this is how my life goes in the realm of fantasy. But congrats to Newcastle, who had looked like they were a team in some serious trouble, but getting their things back together just in time to make me look stupid.
And it wasn't much, but it'll be the first point in the Premier League for Brighton Hove Albion.
That's right. Getting that one away at Watford.
0-0 at Watford. And then the other Sunday match that for some reason, and I don't know if you saw the anger on Twitter from those across the pond. In the 8:30 time slot, There was the Chelsea match.
Yep.
Against Everton, which ended up not being maybe as amazing as we thought it was going to be. Thought it was going to be more of a little bit of a back and forth affair. Ended up being a pretty straightforward 2-0 victory for Chelsea. But that's not what was on Sky. Sky Sports instead decided to play West Brom 1, Stoke 1. The fact that there was actually even two goals is almost surprising. This was destined for 0-0.
Yeah, Tony Pulis versus Tony Pulis' other team. This is the goal scorer for West Brom. Totally shocked me in this. Jay Rodriguez, I literally had no clue he was playing for West Brom.
Talking about a former Southampton player.
Yeah. Long injury layoff. A lot of people were really high on him as a big England potential future guy. But good to see him on the score sheet. Talking about former England guys, Peter Crouch getting the equalizer in this one.
Heard of him.
It's like the oldest man in the Premier League, I think. And he's still scarecrowing things in.
Led Stoke in goals last season.
Still mind-boggling.
That's the Premier League. Let's talk transfers.
Yeah.
Thursday. It's coming.
Deadline.
What are your predictions?
I don't even know to make it. This transfer window has been so bonkers, and it seems like most of the money has already been spent.
Right.
I think the one thing that's still hanging in the air is the Kylian Mbappe move and whether or not that'll actually happen.
Sounds like it might be a loan to PSG, possibly.
A loan.
Alone within the league to your essentially the other rival, the other team that is going to challenge you for your title.
It's an absurd proposition. Like, why isn't it just being straight up? But the idea of it being straight up, means probably another 200 million pound move.
Seriously.
Which would be two players in excess of 400 million.
Well, and like allegedly, yeah, there's an option to buy on this alleged loan.
Oh, really? There's an option to buy. That's
and by the way, if you're sitting there going, "Well, oh, PSG and Monaco," I mean, there's other teams in France that are also good. Not really, and that was shown by the fact that Monaco beat Marseille, that other team you've probably heard of from Ligue 1. 6-1 today.
Yeah, 6-2-1. I think one of the largest defeats Marseille have ever suffered at that range. Lyon are a bit of a Frank McCourt effect
right there.
Yeah, right.
Enjoy it, folks.
Lyon, the other kind of power in France over the last few years, as little as 10 years ago, had won 5 straight Ligue 1 titles. They're in a bit of a downswing. Oh, by the way, their best player over the last few years, Lacazette, he's gone. So
yeah, he's actually he's sitting on the bench at Arsenal right now.
But it is a full credit to Monaco putting that whooping down after losing a couple of their really big players from last year already as well. And Mbappe, because of the kind of transfer speculation, played most of this game on the bench. So they did this with arguably their two best players gone. And Falcao has been fantastic for them in the start of this season. So, and he was actually fairly good at the end of last year as well.
He's found the mute there. I mean, this is a guy that's like into his 30s.
Yeah. Considering how poor he was during his time in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of incredible.
Well, I mean, he played for really bad teams though in the Premier League, right?
Yeah. Really bad ones. Like Chelsea and Manchester United, you know, the two that kind of popped to the front of the line. But yeah, that's I feel like that's the big one that's hanging in the balance. But I do think if that one happens, if there's enough time left in the window for it to transpire, there's potentially another big name that can move that's involved in all of this. If Mbappe moves to PSG, right?
Okay.
Think of who their current number 9 is in that squad. Edinson Cavani.
Yeah.
Is there really enough room in that team for Neymar, Edinson Cavani? Thinking some of the other names already, like,
moved. Well, don't forget, Draxler has also been told that he is no longer in the picture.
Yeah, like surplus requirements. So he could potentially be off, and I would expect he probably will be. He's very injury prone. I think that's a big portion of it. He's also one of those guys that's really hot and really cold. But like, I think that's where all of the big movement hinges. And I'll be honest, when I look at that picture, if Mbappe happens, I think there's one team that's set to benefit from that situation with Cavani. It's Chelsea.
Wait, whoa. What?
Yeah.
We're going to go after this. Cavani? I don't know, man. Jamie Vardy's pretty awesome, and apparently we're in for him.
To be fair, I don't think that would be a bad move.
What, Vardy?
Yeah.
Well, the Vardy party is always a good move, I think.
I mean, if nothing else, you guys are going to get a load of good chips.
That's good.
Made with Jamie Vardy's own salt.
The really rich people in West London are all about, you know, really cheap chips.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I was looking at this today and trying to think a bit about, like, what big moves are left in this window. And I do think that you guys are potentially in line for that one. Like, I think that's something that could actually happen.
I mean, a few dominoes have to fall for that to
They're fairly large dominoes. So,
so let's move to Chelsea. Chelsea allegedly looking to possibly bring upwards of 3 players in here at the end of this window.
We'll bring your squad to 20. So I think that's probably a good idea.
Yeah, probably a good idea. I see we finally didn't have to start that young American. We didn't have to start Michael Scott's son.
No, Michael Scott Jr. in the lineup. 18. Okay.
I don't know. I really don't know what we're doing here. Apparently, we might pay $35 million for Ox. That seems stupid.
Yeah, that does.
Not really sure what he's been. Like, what role is he? So he's going to be depth for Victor Moses?
Sure. I'm sorry, he's definitely not a wingback. But I would have said the same thing about Victor Moses a few months ago. So.
Right. Mm. So, but that's where he's currently playing at Arsenal. I mentioned Jamie Vardy. Might come in. I don't know what that says about Batshuayi's long-term or short-term future here at Chelsea. A guy who's really not looked good in his 3 appearances this season.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know. Then there's like the, hey, are we actually going to go for a move of where we actually get somebody we really need? And that doesn't seem likely either.
So what would you rank as your top, like, priority at the moment?
I mean, we need depth, like, in the midfield.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think out on the wings, we have enough guys. Up top, we have two strikers at the moment. Jamie Vardy is basically just going to just change the 2-3 seating in that situation.
Sure.
Back line, I think we're okay. So I think it's really just about bringing in a midfielder. But I don't know if you just heard the people I mentioned. None of those are midfielders as far as like what we were looking for.
No. Yeah, they definitely aren't.
So I literally don't know what's happening here at this point. Right. Like, I don't know what we're doing. I assume we'll make a move, if not more.
Hopefully.
And I don't know. But you know, a year ago, Chelsea makes what was deemed by even myself at the time as a panic buy. They bring in David Luiz. They paid a lot of money for this Marcus Alonso guy that no one had really ever heard of. Those moves panned out.
That they did.
So obviously we're just hoping that happens again, where these late deadline day moves end up being guys that are really just the bedrock of our starting 11.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's what we get. I don't think it'll happen.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting though.
Yeah. You guys are going to need to make some moves. I think that's from the outsider's
perspective. We need warm bodies if nothing else.
Yeah.
What about Coutinho? The Coutinho saga, does it get solved by the end of this window?
I don't think it does. I think given that Barcelona just splurged a fairly hefty amount on Ousmane Dembele from Borussia Dortmund, that was a deal that went through this week. There's what I'm seeing here on transfer market, it was only a £33 million move. That can't be right. No, it was 105. That was market value, which
so they gives paid you an idea. Slightly over market value?
Slightly. 105 million pound, million euro move, makes him the second most expensive player of all time.
By the way, doesn't this show what we talked about last week?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
They had to go get an 18-year-old phenom. They weren't producing their own.
Yeah. Like, La Masia what? at this point, and tremendous young player that's up and coming. I mean, really no argument there. He was fantastic for Dortmund last year. But I think that is the panic buy that they were going to do if Coutinho fell through, and that's gone through. At this point, I can't really see them spending the rest and then some of their Neymar money on Coutinho.
That Neymar money, burning a hole in their pocket.
Well, though, they've got at least another 117 million euros left to go on that one.
Do they need a striker that's prone to fits of outrage? We might have something for
them. Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Seems he only wants to go back to one portion of Spain.
Listen, we're going to do what we got to do.
I have a feeling he probably wouldn't turn Barcelona down. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like, I think the Coutinho situation is going to rumble on for a while. Like, I just don't think it's going to get solved in time. And I think Liverpool, they've stuck to their guns. Like, no, we're not doing it. And very adamantly have said that publicly. So,
by the way, bold of you to say that a man that turned his own birth country down as far as international duty would turn down his club of choice for the money at Barcelona.
Well, considering he was about to spring for China last year, it's a really valid point. But just like listen to some of the names that have already moved this summer. And these are – I'm reading this through from the highest purchase price down, right? Neymar, 220 million euros.
That's a good amount.
Obscene. That will likely
– that guy cannot defend.
Neymar?
It was literally – I mean there was literally moments where he was literally just holding the back of their shirt and just being drugged.
Yeah.
Up the field.
Well, he might weigh 110 pounds sopping wet. So we could see that number rivaled, but probably not quite as high if Mbappe actually moves. We already talked about Dembele. He's second. Romelu Lukaku, 85 million euros. That's a pretty big name. Alvaro Morata, 65 million euros.
Waste.
Benjamin Mendy, he's moving on to Manchester City, 60 million euros, or 58 million. Lacazette, there's 53 million euros. Kyle Walker, 51 million euros.
Both of them are ways.
James Rodriguez, this is a loan. It was just a loan, but worth 13 million euros in addition to just the loan.
That doesn't make sense.
It's crazy. Bernardo Silva moving to Manchester City for 50 million euros. Gylfi Sigurdsson for 49 million euros. Bonucci, this is the first one into Serie A, 42. Matic to Manchester United for 45.
Still not worth it.
These are insane numbers. And we talked about this at the beginning of the season, the absolutely bonkers dollar amounts that are being spent right now. But there aren't a whole lot of like players who are positioned to move who are left. The guys who have been mooted who are big, like Gareth Bale, he looks pretty settled at Madrid. I don't know that he's going to move on this year. Maybe next year, but I don't think they're there yet. Especially with the Ronaldo situation and the chaos that's kind of revolving around him.
Right.
That I think if there's a guy that would leave them, that might actually be the one who would do it.
So one of those two goes to United next summer.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, it's just there aren't a whole lot of big names left to move, right? Like, I think we're looking for people to move on the people who are kind of petulant and throwing fits right now. So we're talking about guys who are lower in the ranges. I think Diego Costa is probably the highest profile of those.
But he'll be lower in the range because we're so desperate to get rid of him. Yeah, so we'll sell him for like 25 to 30. Even though he's worth around like 50 to 60.
The other one who I think we will likely see move is potentially Ross Barkley.
To where?
There's been talk of your boys picking him up. There's been talk of my boys picking him up.
We'll let you make that mistake.
Oh, man. I would love for another mistake signing to be higher than Moussa Sissoko. So why not?
Yeah.
No. Given how poor he was today. Spurs, I think, need more. Whether or not Ross Barkley is actually the signing they need is
there. Maybe we can bring him in for physical and then you guys sign him.
I just wouldn't feel quite as good as the way that William did it to you.
Well, maybe he'll blossom into the player that William is.
Let me say that I'm not high on that prospect.
No?
No.
Weird. Weird.
So one of the things that we did pose to our listeners heading into this one is we wanted to know, hey guys, what do you want to see as a last-minute move for your club?
Death and chaos, right?
That might make a little bit of a difference. And we did have a fair number of answers here, so we'll go ahead and throw a few of these out. Let's start with Jason Cooper. Jason offered Liverpool center back death. So no actual names named here, but we would presume they're probably getting at Virgil van Dijk. And or is it Van Dijk?
It's how you feel about him. We established this last week. How do you feel about him? Liverpool?
Probably a Van Dijk.
Bit of a Van Dijk right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. But anything at center back would do for Jason. Jonathan Foster, he offered up as a Southampton fan. Is buying goals an option? I would want that for Southampton before being sold to Liverpool the year after, of course.
Like buying physical goals?
Yeah, maybe just buying goals.
Because those are pretty cheap. I mean, I actually just bought some goals
for
like a couple grand.
The ones they use in the Premier League are a little bit more pricey, but
do you want to come over on Wednesday to Stargell and set them up for me?
No, I don't. No.
Sure?
No.
It's only $90.
I don't feel like doing that.
I'll pay you $0.
Oh, I'm in.
I'll take you to the Chinese buffet in Newport that I go to all the time.
No, still out. Walker Tice, know him pretty well. He's a ticket guy for FC Cincinnati. He's a Palace fan. He says, give us a goalkeeper. I think you have a couple.
Yeah.
But never hurts to have more, I suppose.
I mean, you guys went and spent money on a big keeper last year, and you didn't end up using him, and I think he's already gone, right?
Yeah, who was it? The French national
team backup?
Yeah,
yeah,
that's right. I would love to know what happened to him. Good question.
I felt that way last year. I'd love to know what happened to him.
Dan Stafer offers up.
He did nothing.
Dan Stafer offers up. I just want Swan's official to be a buyer and not a seller. Keep Llorente, buy some attacking help. Yeah, I think you need someone to help set up Llorente, given that Gylfi Sigurdsson pretty much was doing everything for that club last year.
Just believe in Tammy Abrams, my friend.
Our good buddy Mike says, moving the team to Vegas. I'm going to try to read in between the lines here and say that he's actually talking about the American team that he follows. Probably not the European team he follows, which would be Arsenal.
Well, the American team would be
the Crew, I think.
The Crew?
Yeah. Bleak.
I'm against that.
That's a bleak statement there.
I just finally went to the stadium. Don't be moving them now.
Yeah. Ryman, I apologize if I butchered either one of your names. He's Mahrez to Spurs. That's something I haven't really thought about, but I'd probably take that over Barkley.
Okay.
The thing is I can't see Levy prying him away for as cheap as Levy would want to buy things. Jason Ridge, our good buddy, offered up, I'll gladly trade you results. He wants to trade what happened with Arsenal, I suppose, what happened with Spurs today. Josh Babcock offered up, Everton desperately need another center forward. They have no one to finish consistently right now. Rooney's finishing 2 of 3 games. I think that's fairly decent.
I think Laura Christine had the best transfer idea.
Yeah, she did offer up Fire Wenger, which is weird because she's a City fan, so it's not really helping her team. But Laura, we love you as always.
Thought that counts.
Yeah, Johnny Ballgame, I'm assuming his real last name is Hoskins, no, gave him his handle. Sell the team in Fire Wenger. So we had another one that was along those lines.
That leads the way.
Yeah, are always effervescent. Gage Magoto offering up Newcastle would use a target forward, but at their going rate this window, I don't know if they can afford one. Mike Ashley would agree with that statement. Jota or Oliveira to Leeds? Sure, why not?
I didn't even hear you. I'm lost in his beard.
Yeah, it is an incredible beard, and he's making a face that scares me slightly. And then Matt Morris offering up the last opinion here. West Ham could use someone to shore up their defense. They could use someone to shore up lots of areas of their pitch right now. So
got a lot of stuff that needs shoring up.
But definitely watch. I think we'll all be trying our best to watch Sky Sports News, given that we don't have a – maybe Fox Sports will do that for us again.
Well, you got Fox Sports Plus. I'm just coming over.
Sounds good. I'll probably be
at work. The house can be unlocked?
Yeah, I'll leave it unlocked for you at work. Works. I think we'll all be watching Sky Sports News as we normally do, going into this transfer deadline day and seeing if some magic happens. I think we're all kind of hopeful of that.
Let's go stateside.
Yeah, well, we'll went through this thing a little bit.
Yeah, a little domestic news. Mm-hmm. Top story. I went to an MLS match finally.
First actual league MLS match you've been to,
I've been to multiple All-Star games.
But no actual MLS league matches. For a guy who's a Crew fan, this is shocking information.
Yeah, but you gotta remember, I'm also a bit of a cheapskate.
That's entirely true. Not your first trip, of course, to Mapfre Stadium. You've been there as a reporter on multiple occasions, but this is your first time in the stands. So
yeah, I actually got to hang out in the stands. One of our listeners, Andy, bought me a beer, a fantastic beer. One of the supporters series that's going on, Land Grant and a brewery in Dallas coming together, a delicious beer.
It's really cool.
Got to enjoy that, to enjoy a Crew win, got to enjoy Ashley Cole hanging out right over by me because I had pretty decent seats.
Mm-hmm. And he took a seat near the bench because he was sent off pretty
well. I took a picture of him, and it was good I took a picture when I did because literally seconds later he was sent off.
Ha, awesome. But I'm glad you enjoyed it. Good first experience at an MLS match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really love it. Good things going on there at Mapfre.
Mm-hmm.
Love me some Crew. I can't wait to go back. I think they have 2 more home games or 1 more home game. I'm going to try to get to one of them.
This is probably the furthest into a Crew season that I've been without going to a game ever. Like ever.
And here I am beating you to the punch.
Makes me feel a little uncomfortable, if I'm being honest.
You're a little preoccupied.
No, there are things going on. My
Saturdays and Wednesdays are open at the moment.
Okay.
The other days of the week, not so much, but
those are days I'm normally busy.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're definitely busy those days.
With things. Congrats to you getting that first MLS game under the belt. Staying in MLS, let's talk about the team that you watched play against the Crew, LA Galaxy. They're pretty much terrible.
They're garbage.
Yeah. All sorts of things going on wrong with them right now. They're bottom of the West after tonight's match. This is the lowest they've ever been ranked. JP Delacamero, I think it was him, said this on air. This is the lowest they've ever been. The last time they were bottom of the West, there weren't 10 teams in the West, so they literally couldn't have been any lower than this. They have been shut out in four straight losses. That has never happened in their 22-year history, which is kind of mind-boggling. So they're not doing too hot at the moment.
Which, by the way, so VAR is a new thing in MLS. Mm-hmm. The match I was at, VAR was implemented three times in like a 5-minute span. And we're not talking about like, oh, hey, we're just going to check on something here real quick. A red card was confirmed. Mm-hmm. A penalty was awarded. And a goal was disallowed. Well, I mean, we just needed the mistaken identity one, and we had the cycle.
Had it all covered. VAR not having the most sterling of starts, but I think they're starting to work out the kinks a little bit.
Like, I don't know. That Orlando-New York game a couple weeks ago, I thought really broke some new ground for replay.
Really? Telling us the machines aren't ready to take over yet, huh?
Well, luckily there's humans looking at the machines.
Yeah, it's a very valid point.
I think that's the one thing that people are missing here. This is not robots making a call. This is really just a person staring at a screen.
Oh, that's a good point.
Just like you or I.
Yeah.
So the human element is still alive and well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're afraid of that leaving the game, it actually isn't.
Yeah.
And honestly, and I joke about the fact that there was three in like a 5-minute span. To their credit,
mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like I was waiting around.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I mean, it's quick.
They go through it pretty quickly.
Yeah, right. I feel like it was quick. I didn't feel like it was really hampering the pace of the game. That's now, good. Being someone that has covered Major League Baseball games for years, this is something that they've been doing for a few seasons now. And those reviews suck. Because baseball is already struggling with its pace.
Yeah.
And adding, Tubbs walking over to the video screen for 3 minutes, not helping.
Yeah, but luckily it's a sport that's accustomed to waiting around for anything to happen.
Well, unfortunately for them, the millennials and the generations coming up next are becoming more impatient by the day.
Yeah, it's not necessarily so not helping in their favor there. Let's move out of MLS real quickly. Let's talk about the USL playoff race, which is really heating up at the moment.
Uh-huh. Your boys doing themselves a big service Wednesday night, getting a crucial win to kind of right the ship a little bit.
Yeah, it had been a poor stretch. They'd been winless in their last five. They had won once in their previous five prior to that point, and then getting a big win on Wednesday. Which
literally pushed them back into the
playoff race. I think the U.S. Open Cup run has been a little bit of a distraction point for the team, as great as it was.
Well, if nothing else, even if it doesn't distract you mentally, it's taken away
physically. Yeah, I think that's where it's really been the distraction more than anything. And it's, Alan Koch has done a great job of trying to balance that. But they're back in the hunt, which is really good to see. Results were very favorable for FCC over the weekend. A couple of the teams behind them losing. Bethlehem in particular, New York Red Bulls getting a draw late on in the 90th minute that was really big for their chances. And then, of course, the team that's just two spots behind them in the table and just outside on the playoffs is Pittsburgh Riverhounds, and they're coming to Cincinnati this weekend. So
yeah. Even Louisville lost.
Yeah.
Right?
Actually, the top three teams in the league actually lost over the course of their last three games, at least in the East. Louisville, yeah. Charlotte, and Charleston all being downed. So really hot race there. There are, 5 teams within 3 points of one another. If you stretch down to New York Red Bulls in 10th, you're looking at just 4 points between all of them. So really tight race there in the East. And the West, things are also pretty tight. Although I'll be honest, I don't quite follow that conference near as closely since we don't cross over that much with them. But it's been a phenomenal USL season so far, and definitely things still pretty hot down in the lower divisions. So
keeping with we're always a fan of consistency, and Los Dos also garbage.
Yeah.
So keeping the whole organization just struggling out there in LA.
Things are not going well there for the moment.
Well, don't worry. I mean, it's not like they're going to have like market competition starting next season.
Right? No, nothing like that. No one making big moves.
This is a good time for them to kind of be completely rebuilding as an organization.
Sure, that makes sense.
But by the way, I did notice this. Going back to MLS, sort of. You mentioned FC Cincinnati. Did they break the Chicago Fire? Chicago Fire, since losing to FC Cincinnati in the U.S. Open Cup, 2-1-6. This was the hottest team in America going into that match. They are now 2-1-6. Allowed Minnesota to get their first road win in MLS of their history over the weekend.
I'll take credit for that. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, go ahead and do it.
All right.
Do it.
Only other domestic news really to announce is that we got to see the squad that's been announced for the upcoming World Cup qualifiers. Yep.
Got some dudes in there.
There are some dudes in there. Overall,
Raimondo's back in the fold. So that's
something.
A thing.
Look, I don't think there's anything too, like, groundbreaking in it. It's a very Bruce Arena team, which I think, for the most part, is what we all would have expected.
Right. Because we're just trying to make it to the World Cup.
Yeah.
Do we have a plan once we get there? No.
We'll figure that out once we get there.
Yeah.
Christian Pulisic, if you were even the slightest worried that he wasn't in the team, don't worry. He's in the team.
Right.
A guy who, by the way, is stupid stinking hot at the moment. Scored two goals, has an assist so far in three matches. On top of that, with Dembele going out the door at Dortmund, that now means that Christian's probably, not that he probably wasn't already in this fight anyway, but he's probably going to be starting just about every match.
Right.
This kid is still, like, what, 19?
19 years old, yeah. What We're now? Not too many podcasts away from us talking about, maybe like in Winners and Wankers or something, him like going to prom right after a match.
Yeah, great.
So yeah, young guy. Can you give me the, do you have the defensive set, like the defenders that have been brought
in? I have the list.
I feel like that's where there might be some consternation.
Here's where the first name on the list is one that's going to be very disconcerting for anyone who's looking towards the future.
Oh no.
Someone that used to be my roommate in Olympic development, DeMarcus Beasley.
Old.
I'm sorry, I'm retiring from Sunday League. Starting this fall, right? Like, I am literally giving up 11 aside.
Right.
Which, by the way,
Monday night men's 77, though. We're working on
that. We are. You're still scraping away. You might get me here shortly. But I'm 35, right? Like, and full props to Beasley. Like, dude is
ageless.
I mean, he's really aged like a fine wine. And
I mean, I remember covering the match and interviewing the last USA Mexico match, the last World Cup cycle.
So
talking to Beasley
two ago,
back in early 2014, summer of 2014,
sure,
September of 2014, whatever that match was, and the vibe was like, yeah, this is kind of his swan song.
Psych.
Same spot in the cycle 4 years later. And still here he is in the fold.
But the other players that are alongside him, Matt Beisler, also kind of old. Jeff Cameron, also kind of old.
But still effective, at least for Cameron. Cameron's still...
Oh, yeah, I mean,
I think he's still playing at a level where you expect
There's no argument
him to
that
be
he
there.
Should be right. in there, all right? And Beisler, to be fair, is playing much better this year.
Yeah.
Omar Gonzalez, yep, he's old. Matt Hedges, someone a little bit younger. We're glad to see a little bit of youth there. Mm-hmm. Eric Lehigh. Back in the picture, and he's actually been been playing fairly well for Forest over in the championship of late. Same for Tim Ream, someone who's been pulled back into the picture.
Hi, everybody.
But also a little on the old side. Jorge Villafana, a guy that we've all been pretty pleased to see in there. He's done well to come
Finally
in.
Finally someone that can hold down the left back position.
Yeah, and included as a defender, Graham Zusi.
Oh, okay.
Comfort just... fallen out of that defensive end of the pitch.
Now, if you're wondering, hey, wait a minute, what about John Brooks is hurt.
Yep.
So he wasn't getting into this one. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think. Does that new era of that back line need to start showing up?
One would hope. I mean, the thing about defenders is it's tough. Like, young guys are very incident prone.
Sure.
Age usually is a good thing at the defensive end of the pitch, but there is like an upper limit on that, and I feel like we're scraping into that range.
I don't know if you feel this way. This is just a thought. Has this whole Bruce Arena thing as far as new players, as far as bringing in the young guys, as far as like this next generation, does the whole Bruce Arena appointment almost put that on pause till after the cycle?
I think that's definitely where it is. I mean, I think the most important thing for this country is to make another World Cup.
Like Bruce's job is make the World Cup, and then I'm not even sure they had even thought that far along the path to figure out, hey, what about once we get there?
Yeah, that's an entirely different equation. And I have, again, like utmost respect for what Bruce has done, is capable of, and I'm not really worried in a sense, but I'm also not like, oh man, we're going to really surprise some people in this tournament. Like, I think we're going to be the U.S. team that we've all come to know, and I don't necessarily know that's a bad thing either. But there is going to need to be a development question that's going to be answered at some point, and I do a little bit fear that we're putting that too far into the back burner.
Let's go winners and wankers. Close this thing out.
Yeah. Probably about time. You guys are probably tired of hearing us chat at this point. Why don't you give me your winner?
David Villa, back in the Spanish national team squad for World Cup qualifiers?
Controversy as well back in Spain over this one.
Hey, they can suck one.
Yeah.
Villa deserves it. Still playing a great level. Mm-hmm. Why not bring him in? What, are you going to bring in old Fatso Costa that's just hanging out, just...
No.
Eating cheese out there in Brazil or whatever it is? No, that's a terrible idea.
I wonder what that cheese is, though.
Oh, it's going to be good cheese.
Yeah.
For the obviously, Costa is a guy that's just eating garbage.
Yeah, there's no way he's eating healthy. That's very true.
Right.
But great pick. Yeah, I like that one.
Your winner?
I went with my alma mater here in Cincinnati, St. Xavier High School.
Oh, okay.
Knocking off the number one ranked high school team in the nation and an in-state athletic dominance rival.
In what sport?
Soccer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, St. Ignatius. For real? They beat St. Ignatius, the number one team in the nation, 4-2 this weekend in the Jesuit Cup, which was a really big deal. If you don't know Ohio soccer or Ohio athletics, particularly in the high school range, St. X and St. I's up in Cleveland are literally probably the two most dominant athletic programs across all sports. I do think it's a bit absurd that we have like national rankings in high school sports sometimes. I think it's like there is no national tournament, so we will never really know answers to these types of things. Oh, and in high school soccer, it's even more confusing because there's a fall season and a spring season depending on
what country. Is the Jesuit Cup even part of any of this? I mean, the Jesuit Cup, obviously, it's a cup that's works-based.
Yeah.
Well,
they're both Jesuit high schools. Right. Yeah. So it really doesn't matter the cup, but just ignore the cup aspect of it, and it's more just a rivalry match between two schools who regularly duke it out in multiple sports. So, but it was a big win for the program. You know, anytime.
Who does Pope Francis, as a Jesuit, who does he pull for in this?
I'm going to just assume that it's St. X.
I mean, you would hope so.
I know, so I don't know really anything in that realm. But yeah, it was a big win for my alma mater. I'm really glad to see the guys get a very morale-boosting win. So, it's cool.
Sweet.
Yeah, right. Nothing like taking it back to high school for your Winners and Wankers podcast.
I think I've done it myself.
Yeah, it's fine.
Your wanker?
My wanker, I'm going to give it to FC Barcelona for denouncing Neymar and says he didn't comply with his contract after they sold him for a gajillion dollars.
They're trying to grift like $8 million from this guy.
$8.5 million in damages they're looking for. Look, everything about Neymar's arrival at Barcelona was shady, right? And Barcelona was nearly at the root of all of that.
Right.
Think of the number of players they've had who have been indicted for tax fraud over the last like 8 years. You guys should probably just let this one go. You just got paid way over market value for a guy who is, albeit a tremendous player, but. Can you please just move on with your lives? Like, that is an insane amount of money you just received.
Yeah.
You don't need another $8.5 million out of that.
Right.
Was that just going to buy you a marginally better player? Like, get on. So, yeah.
I don't know. They need the money, considering that their academy is completely overrated at this point.
I suppose that's true. Can buy you some more players illegally and get you on another transfer ban.
Yay.
Yeah, you're a wanker.
My wanker, Barcelona superfan LeBron James, has...
Part-time Liverpool FC owner as well.
Right, shareholder, has suggested to Liverpool that, hey guys, you should sell Coutinho to Barcelona.
What?
Thanks, LeBron.
Yeah.
Thanks for that advice. Thanks for what are you wearing, by the way? Oh, you're wearing a Barcelona kit while you said that.
Okay. Oh, cool.
Shut up.
Got it. Oh, my God.
Just a kid from Akron, so.
Yeah, he can wear whatever he wants.
Just got to let him be an idiot.
Well, I mean, New Balance versus Nike. I think that's where it all lies at this point, right?
Hey, whatever. He'll be playing for the Lakers next year.
It's not unlikely. That brings us to the end of this week's show. Thanks for sticking out with us as we push into the hour and 20-minute range.
Sweet spot.
What you should do
when we really get going
to reward us for this excellent show we put on for you is give us a very honest 5-star ranking.
Yep.
On so iTunes,
just trash us in the words.
Mm-hmm.
Hit five stars.
Yeah. I don't know what the ranking is on Google Play, but you should do that there as well.
Right.
We are even on Stitcher, so if you want to do that in that space,
whatever ranking they have. Sounds gross.
Yeah.
What is it?
Stitch it up. If you want to get involved in next week's show, you can get a hold of Jeremy at Jeremy Lance on Twitter, myself at Wrong Side of Pond. We have an email address that no one emails, but if you feel like doing it, it's contact@wrongsideofthepond.com. And we'll listen to things you have to say.
Yeah. You'll get an out of office reply, but from 3 years ago.
You won't get that either. No, it's just into the abyss. So, thanks for listening, and check back soon.
Bye.
Bye.